is gone, long time passing. Where have all the flowers gone, long time ago?
Our guest this hour is wild about wildflowers, and we will share his enthusiasm and get a lesson on wildflower appreciation and learn more about the personalities and the benefits of wildflowers. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And you can help teach this Wildflowers 101 course by sharing your questions, by sharing your favorite wildflowers and the places you enjoy them, by calling 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can even post a photograph or a poem about wildflowers for us to share on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guest. He is Alan Vancara, a retired geology professor and author of 5 nature books, including Wildflower Personalities. And he joins us from Wyoming. Thank you very much for being with us. So tell us how you became so passionate about wildflowers.
Well, I think it goes back to when I was a child living on a farm in northwestern North Dakota. And these wildflowers would grow along the road edges, and I was, you know, attracted to them by their color and their form and so on. So it does go back quite a ways.
Yeah, and Why were they so fascinating to you?
I'm not really sure. It could possibly be due to my being the only child in the family, and I had no sibling to relate to, so I would relate to nature.
Yeah.
I think it must go something like that.
And how did you choose which flowers to showcase in your book?
Well, I wanted to have a wide variation in color, in form, in shape, and a wide variation in the makeup of various wildflowers. So I was looking for quite a bit of diversity, I suppose would be the way to say it.
Yeah. Well, there must be a lot of diversity. You're in Wyoming. You grew up in North Dakota. We're here in Wisconsin. Are there wildly different wildflowers in different regions of the country?
Yes, they do vary, but surprisingly, you do find a lot of similarities from one place to the other as well. For example, I can study some of the wildflowers here in Wyoming, and if I go to North Dakota or South Dakota, I can find some of the same species. So there's quite a difference, and then in some cases there's some similarity.
Yeah. Well, let's just hold a little course here on wildflowers. When are most of the wildflowers in bloom?
Well, here in Wyoming, it's pretty, I've discovered it's quite specific. The greatest diversity here in where I'm at the moment would be the third week in June.
Mm-hmm. But there are still wildflowers in bloom in the at this time of year, aren't there?
There are a few lingers on, but there aren't very many anymore. It's getting quite late in the season, but you can still find a few.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the photographs in your book and sections is on the sunflower, and I'm certainly still seeing the sunflower.
That's true. That's true. In fact, we have a common sunflower growing right next to our house here.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of your favorite wildflowers and why?
Well, I guess I would first of all go to the most favorite, and that is the Calypso orchid. This is a beautiful little plant that grows at an elevation of only about 5 inches. The blossom is at about 5 inches from the ground. And it has all the features of an orchid. Some people don't realize that there are orchids in temperate regions. They think that the orchids only live in tropical places. But here we have them at the proper place in...
Mm-hmm.
In the mountains here.
Well, we'll go into some of your other favorite flowers and other ones that you have in the book. But I did want to also ask you that your book includes essays that assign personalities to each flower. What is the personality of the Calypso orchid?
I guess the personality is the interesting makeup, the morphology, as botanists would term it, the interesting morphology of that particular flower. It has an intricate display of color and spots and stripes. And once you see this particular flower, well, you'll never forget it.
So how do you find a flower's personality? What determines it for you?
Well, I have to look at a combination of features. I have to look at the color. That's the most obvious thing, I guess, to most people. And then when you go from color to what you might call the floral attributes or the morphology, then you start filling out this personality that I give it, or that I recognize from it, I suppose is the way to say it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so besides the Calypso orchid, what's another one of your favorite wildflowers and why?
Well, one that I really like almost as much as the Calypso is the shooting star. This is an interesting little plant. It doesn't grow much taller than the small orchid we were discussing. And it has its petals are sort of swept backward. And at the other end of the flower, there's a kind of a pointed beak. It looks like the beak of a bird. It's dark. So you have the beak pointing one direction, and you have the swept back petals for the other.
Mm-hmm. And what is the personality of the shooting star?
Yeah, that's right.
What is the personality of the shooting star?
Well, it's the same thing as we discussed before. You look at the those features that make it distinctive. If you're walking along kind of an open area, not the woods in this case, but in an open area, and you see this flash of color with that swept back petals, you're attracted to it right away. At least I am.
Yeah. Well, we'll go into more specific flowers, but talk some, if you will, how important are wildflowers ecologically?
Well, ecologically, I guess we would say the most obvious connection is the flowers and the, how should I put it, the pollination of the pollination of flowers is the important thing that perpetuates all the plant life. And so the combination of the insects and the flowers makes this possible.
Mm-hmm. But I know that one of the reasons why you wrote the book on wildflowers is that you hope that we will gain an appreciation of wildflowers and help protect endangered wildflowers. There are wildflowers that are endangered.
That's very true, and that's one of my major concerns. And that's one of the main reasons I wrote the book, to introduce to the public this fascinating array of life.
Yeah. So, what wildflowers or how endangered are wildflowers?
Well, I think that any time you have a situation where man is constructing houses or various other buildings or disturbing the terrain, there's going to be a conflict between, you know, that activity and the interest that the other people have just from the standpoint of the beauty of these forms. And so there's a conflict there, and I've try to address it in the book.
Mm-hmm. And that means that as much as I love wildflowers, I should not pick a bouquet of them to bring home and put on my table?
Well, if you do it sparingly, I guess it's okay. But I guess one thing I don't adhere to is if a youngster is hiking along with his parent and he picks these flowers, gives them to daddy or mommy, and then they get thrown by the wayside and nothing happens, and it's a kind of a waste, I guess. It's not instilling probably the proper attitude toward these forms.
Yeah. You also wrote a book on edible wild plants and herbs, and the wildflower certainly is, in many cases, edible, but you say only as a last resort?
Pretty much as a last resort, and I wouldn't eat these various plants unless you were in a survival situation. I think that makes it justifiable.
So what can you tell us about Wisconsin wildflowers? Are there any particularly different species here, or are there any special Wisconsin wildflowers that you can tell us about?
Well, I haven't spent a lot of time in Wisconsin, but on the western edge, I have done considerable canoeing. And I've seen several species there in western Wisconsin that are very similar or the same thing as in, say, much of Minnesota, where I am more acquainted. Mm-hmm. Minnesota has a terrific array of wildflowers, and I've enjoyed them for a number of years. So, yes, there are similarities in Wisconsin and Minnesota and adjoining areas.
So what are some of the more abundant wildflowers of Minnesota and Wisconsin?
Well, let me think back here now. You have you mentioned the sunflowers, the common sunflower. That's one of them in common. It's all over the place. And one plant called seagull lily is one that one can find in both areas. That's a plant that grows in open areas. So that's a couple. Of course, there are various roses, and there's one called prairie crocus that lives in open areas that you can expect. Those are a few.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll talk about some more as we talk about wildflowers. We are talking about appreciating wildflowers and welcoming your questions, maybe your favorite wildflowers, for our guest. He is Alan Van Kara. He is a retired geology professor. He's a nature writer. He's written 5 nature books. He is the author of Wildflower Personalities. And we'll talk some about wildflower therapy coming up. And we'll also get some tips on taking photographs of wildflowers. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post a comment or post a photo of wildflowers on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Flowers everywhere.
We are talking about flowers, wildflowers. Fall is certainly coming, but there are still some wildflowers out there blooming in the woods and prairie areas of the state. We are talking with a wildflower expert who, among other things, advocates wildflower therapy. And we are talking with him about identifying and photographing different wildflowers, talking about the attributes of wildflowers, the benefits of wildflowers, and wondering what is your favorite wildflower. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Alan Van Kara is a retired geology professor, nature writer, and author of Wildflower Personalities. And before we get to the phones, Alan, what do you mean by wildflower therapy. What is that?
What I think of that as being is a kind of a soothing effect that you get from interacting with wildflowers, interacting with them on a familiar basis so that you can recognize them and see how they fit into the ecology of things.
Yeah.
So it's a sort of a, as I say, it's a soothing feeling that you feel when you interact with these life forms.
Let's go to the phones. Monica in Greenfield is with us. Hello, Monica.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to mention that my favorite wildflower is the trillium. We had a lot of it in an old house where we lived because there was some forest. And I spent a lot of time looking at them and pulling garlic mustard out so that it wouldn't take over that area. And I also have a quick story about, a funny story about a wildflower. I was visiting an old lady in South Mexico, and she had a beautiful garden, and she had fruit trees. And we were talking, and all of a sudden she goes, "Oh my goodness, excuse me, I have to take care of this pest right away." And she went and broke off a branch of a fruit or of a tree that she had, and it had a huge, white, papery orchid, and she threw it in the garbage. And I actually rescued it from the garbage, and I took it with me. But it is not what you want to do with wildflowers, but once in a while you have somebody that just throws them in the garbage, and I was fortunate to bring it with me to my garden.
Oh, so she thought it was some sort of invasive plant or an undesirable plant?
A pest for her because it was growing on the branch of her tree.
Oh, I see, yeah. So, Alan, what is your reaction to that?
Well, that's an interesting story. I didn't get all of it, but it's an interesting one. And as far as the trillium, I'm very familiar with the trillium. I spent quite a bit of time in northern Minnesota, and that's a very common plant there, especially in the spring.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Monica. The trillium has to be my favorite, too. I just, something about especially those canopy in the forest of those white flowers and the green leaves. And I'm now seeing them at greenhouses where you can plant a trillium, you know, in your own garden. Do you recommend that, Alan?
Well, yes, I do, because there's a lot of it going on already, and I think I can give you an interesting connection with planting wildflowers. My daughter gave me a kit of wildflowers. You can get various species of water lilies in this case, and I had four of these little portions of the root, and planted these in a small pool right next to the house. In a couple of weeks, a leaf appeared from the water lily, and in a couple of weeks more, why the blossoms of water lilies were very obvious. So I'd have to agree with the usage of these planting these flowers. I think that's okay, as long as it's, you know, controlled and people appreciate what they get from it.
Monica also mentioned that she is trying to help the trilliums by pulling garlic mustard away from them. That's an invasive plant here that is really threatening a lot of plants, I think. I mean, the invasive plants do pose a threat to wildflowers?
Well, yeah, there. In some cases, the invasive plants do better than the natives, you know. You've probably seen examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's one out in this country called oxeye daisy. I've seen that over a tremendous area from almost one coast to the other. And we call these aliens, or some people do, they call them weed flowers, because they are out of place, and in many cases doing better than the natives. You know, one has to be careful if you're trying to pull certain plants to keep them from, you know, invading others, that you have the right connection.
That you make sure you're pulling the bad guy.
Yeah, you're pulling the right plants out. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take another call. Therese in Stevens Point. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Thank you. I used to work during the summertime up in northern Minnesota at Lake Itasca, where the headwaters of the Mississippi starts, and I would always be up there at the time that the showy lady slippers were in bloom along the lake, and so I'd have to say that's one of my top favorites, of course, along with that, the yellow lady slipper. Both of those are really unique. I don't see as many of those in Wisconsin, so I guess I'd have to agree with your last caller that trilliums would have to be number one of my Wisconsin flowers. But one of the ones I get most excited about is when I find bloodroot in the springtime, because my grandmother was one to show me that when you break the stem, you get this red juice coming out. And I'd also like to let your listeners know, if they're interested in learning how to identify wildflowers, there's a really easy-to-use Wisconsin wildflower guide that came out just a year or two ago by a professor at the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And his name is Emmett Ujavich, and Ujavich is spelled with a J. And it's a really easy-to-use wildflower guide that is specific to Wisconsin. And
wonderful.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you very much for sharing that that story and that resource. Well, what can you tell us anything about the lady slipper, Alan?
Well, I've witnessed it many times, as she has, and every time I see this flower, it really gives me a good feeling of satisfaction that I'm looking at another place where the flower has been preserved, at least not abused, we should say. So those lady slippers are another interesting assemblage of flowers that are worth preserving, mm-hmm. and we have to be careful with them.
And what about the bloodroot?
Bloodroot, yes, I've seen that in Minnesota in many, many places. And it's the same connection here. You find it in usually pretty good dense woods. And it gives that feeling of connection when you see some of these blossoming.
Yeah. So what tips do you have for, I guess, the wildflower novice who, I mean, I appreciate wildflowers and I like taking hikes and seeing them in, you know, the fields and woods and meadows and such. But how do I go about identifying wildflowers?
Well, first of all, I guess it would be useful to become acquainted with a few of the parts of a wildflower.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, so that each flower has a certain assemblage of parts. And, of course, you almost always start with the petals, I suppose, and you work to other parts like the sepals, which are behind the petals. And so you have to become a little bit acquainted with the parts. And I mentioned the stamens and the pistils. There's others. You look at the leaves and determine whether they're opposite or alternate. You do it systematically is the point I'm trying to make. And once you get familiar with a few of the parts of the flower you're working with, well, then you will get one of these guides that the lady suggested for Wisconsin and get down into the nitty-gritty of it all and look carefully and scrutinize the plant so that you become very familiar with it. And then you might be able to get to the actual species. There's a lot of hybridization going on, and sometimes it's difficult to get it right to species, but you might be able to get close to it.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Alan Van Kara. He is the author of Wildflower Personalities. And our next caller is Pat in Duluth. Hello, Pat.
Hi. I wanted to recommend two books to people. And they're not wildflower guides, but the benefit of them is that they list host plants for both moths and butterflies, and they're Northwoods guides. So if you plant these wildflowers, and most of them, or probably all of them, are native, you have a great opportunity to attract local moths and butterflies to your yard, and you get to see the whole butterfly and moth life cycle, because you'll see the adults laying eggs, mostly butterflies, unless you're out at night for the moths.
Wonderful,
that's
Pat. Thank you so much.
Connection.
I'm sorry, Alan, what did you say?
I say that is an interesting connection, and I'm glad that you brought it out.
Well, you also feature one of the wildflowers in your book is the milkweed, and we absolutely have to have the milkweed for monarchs, don't we?
That's pretty much true. That's right. There are certain forms like that connection that we should be aware of. And there's another interesting connection. We have a plant out here called yucca. You've probably seen it in other parts of the world. And yucca has a connection with a yucca moth. Yucca moth aids in pollination of the plant, and in the larval stage, the moth, the larvae, feed on the yucca. So it's a reciprocal kind of situation. And the connection between insects and flowers is a very established one.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at the sunflower with a bee on it. That's a photograph that... Now, did you take all the photographs that are in the book?
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
yes,
very nice. So what tips do you have for us in terms of photographing wildflowers?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of things that we could get into, but maybe we just touch on a few. When I go out and try to photograph a wildflower, the first thing I look for is what condition the flower is in. There isn't much point in taking a photograph of a flower which is incomplete, or the leaves are partially destroyed or something of this type. So get a complete version of the flower that you're after. And then the next thing I think about is getting close enough so that you really show the features of that flower. Most people, when they photograph flowers, I don't think they get close enough. So the thing to think about continually is get close and then get closer still. And the closer you get, the more detail you will see of that flower, and the better will be the image. Another thing to think about is what's the background of this flower that you're taking a photograph of? Is it confusing back there with other plants, or is it clean? Or perhaps you can improve on the background by taking along some kind of background material, like, for example, a board that you painted black, and you have it on a stand of some kind, because it has this black background. Why, then the details of the plant are shown very clearly. So think about the background and whether it's busy or not.
Sounds good. Let's go to Don in Warren, Illinois. Hello, Don.
Hi. We have about three, four patches of wildflowers of prairie restoration with up to 40 flowers. My favorite is New England aster. Here is right now is the goldenrod and the brown-eyed Susans and the black-eyed Susans and the sunflowers all glowing yellow out there, and then New England aster in that dark purple blue just sets it off so beautifully. But in passing, I would like to put in a word about roadside mowing. Around where I live, every landowner seems to be dedicated to not allowing any form of life live on any property. They got to mow it like a golf course. There's no place for a bee or a butterfly or a bird or a mouse. Why are we spending all this $3.70 gas mowing roadside and destroying all the wildlife. And along with that,
I know that a lot of people wonder that. I suppose some say that it obstructs the road and could pose a safety hazard. But I'm with you, Don. I bet you are too, Alan. Don't mow down those ditches full of wildflowers.
Yeah, that's a touchy situation, and I'm glad you brought that up.
So I love this, the black-eyed Susan, the brown-eyed Susan. I'm familiar with those, but not the New England aster. You know about that one, Alan?
Yes, I do. That's quite a cosmopolitan aster. Asters are a very diverse group, and right now in my part of the world, there are a few asters blossoming. They're bluish, and they're low-growing, but at other times of the year, you see tall ones and of different colors. So, yes, I'm familiar with that one.
Thanks very much. Lori in Hales Corners. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I have a couple questions and something to share. I am kind of interested in thistles since my grandson and I went on a little field trip to help a friend remove thistles from her yard. We were pulling them out by the roots. And then now I'm thinking of the ecology and all that, and I'm wondering what place do thistles have in the ecology? But I'd like to get this in and share this little tongue twister that Josh and I came up with as we were leaving the place. And Josh wrote the first part, and I had to kind of broaden it out. I'll show you. Joshua Greco's Thistle Tongue Twister. Water trickles down the fickle thistle with prickles. That's Joshua's. Now, I had to explain why fickle. Why fickle? Because to thrive, the thistle must hide a bit, then grow real quick. She hides, then grows a lot. So grows the fickle thistle, a heck of a hassle for those whose gardens they speckle.
That is really good.
Pretty clever writing.
Yeah. So what in that world, what do we do? What are those thistles doing around us? Do we need them? Can we eat them? I mean, what is this?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up here. We have some thistles still blossoming here in my part of the world, too. One of the interesting ones that I find is what is called bristle thistle. And the blossom can be, probably 3 inches or more across, and stands out there in the road ditches very, very markedly. But as far as what are they good for, yes, some of these thistles can be eaten. There was if you've traveled through Yellowstone Park at all, there's a story about a person who was lost and on the verge of not making it in a survival sense. And he came across a thistle called elk thistle. And he actually survived on that thistle, the root of it, and came out fine. So that's one connection that you can think of. And there are other kinds of thistles that can be eaten. But as far as eating any kind of plant, you have to be very careful to seek it out and identify it correctly so that you don't get poisoned by it, because a lot of the plants are okay and others are not.
Yeah.
So be careful with them.
Lori, thank you for sharing your I guess, poem about the thistle.
Yeah, I really liked that one.
Yeah, that was great. But you know, I think of the thistle as a weed. And I have plenty of them not hiding at all in my lawn. But what's the difference between a weed and a wildflower?
Okay, years ago, when I remember I was in grade school, in a little botany section we had, the definition of a weed is that it's a plant out of place. A weed is a plant out of place.
Mm-hmm.
And A flower, a wildflower, is one which belongs at a certain place. Uh-huh. It's native to that place, and it isn't what we would call an alien. So you have an alien and you have a native. Those are the distinctions.
Okay, I'm thinking of the violet that's in my lawn then. It's not. It's kind of out of place, but I leave it there. I think it's pretty, and it's actually the state flower of Wisconsin, so it's native. But a lot of people don't like, violets or certain flowers like that popping up in their lawn.
Yeah, well, I can see that side of the issue too. If there's a conflict there, I guess you have to let your conscience be your guide.
We are talking about wildflowers with our guest, the author of Wildflower Personalities. Alan Van Kara is a retired geology professor and the writer of 5 nature books. We are talking about wildflowers. We're welcoming the places you enjoy seeing wildflowers, the favorite kinds of wildflowers that you have, and welcoming your questions, too. And for that matter, if you have poems or photographs of wildflowers, you can call in and talk about them. You can post them on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Wildflower Personalities is a book of photographs and poetry and writings on the benefits of wildflowers. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about wildflowers during this hour and welcoming your questions for our guest and your favorite wildflowers and places where you enjoy seeing wildflowers. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Peg in Rice Lake is with us. Hello, Peg.
Hi there. I'm a nature lover. Everything from bears to wildflowers.
Good.
And I... the strip of land along the road that they always want to mow down or spray with ugly stuff, in recent years here they haven't. They will cut it, but they don't spray it. And one year they had cut it after quite a while, and all kinds of interesting things sprang up. And I started watching it. I named it my weed garden, and for the next about 4 or 5 years, I watched that thing like a hawk. I found 56 varieties of wildflowers I could identify with my book. And my neighbors thought I was crazy. I called it my weed garden. They called it my beautification project. But it was fun. And wild geraniums, marshmallow marigolds were back further. Trilliums, wild strawberries, swamp buttercups, that was further back too. Virginia waterleaf, jack in the pulpit, Solomon seal, false Solomon seal, you name it, starflower.
Wonderful, wonderful, Peg. I mean, I don't know if we have time for all 56, though. It sounds beautiful, doesn't it, Alan?
Oh, yes, that's quite a variation. 56 species in one area. I'm impressed.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think of some of the others that are in your book that she just named. You have a geranium in the book, don't you?
There is a wild geranium, yes. You know, one thing that I would like to point out in the book that we haven't touched on, for each flower besides the photograph, there's an essay. And there's a haiku poem, and that I thought that was a little bit unusual. And if it's okay with you, I would like to take one of these haikus and for one of the flowers and read it.
Well, yeah, do you have a favorite right in front of you right now?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, go ahead. What is it about? And then, what is the flower and then the haiku?
Okay, the flower is one that grows in the open terrain in this part of the world. It's called a seagull lily. And it's a true lily. And the haiku that I wrote for that particular flower goes like this. The title is Gambler. white grassland tulip lures insect pollinators before bears gulp its bulb.
Well, that's serving a pretty good purpose there.
Yeah. So anyway, for all of these 27 species that I cover in this introductory book, why I wrote a haiku to go with it.
Right, and I'm glad that we did get to some of those, and I think that's why our listener shared her poem about the thistle, because I invited people to share if they have a poem. Here's the one that you wrote about the showy milkweed. The showy milkweed, is that your run-of-the-mill milkweed? Is that a special species?
That's the correct common name.
Okay, so here's the haiku that you wrote for that. Repellent. Monarchs slurp milk juice, make their bodies poisonous, repel feeding birds. You have to tell me what that means. So really, the milkweed makes the monarch unappetizing for birds?
Well, that's the connection, yes. There's the point behind these haiku is to try to distill the essence of a particular flower. And that's why I did it. And I should point out that I've, here in Wyoming, in Casper, I have taught a wildflower course in the summer. I've done that twice now. And I tried to get my students to follow along, take the photographs of the flowers, and write haiku. They seem to be a little bit bothered by writing the haiku, and I don't know why, but that's the reaction that I received.
Oh, Wisconsin Public Radio listeners love to write haiku, so maybe we'll get some more before we're done. 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Here's one that you wrote for the common sunflower. Sun-built energy. Summer sunny face manufactures soon to come tasty oily seeds. I like it. Here's a comment. James on Facebook shared a photo of a trillium. He says, I took this photo on a hike of the Plover River section of the Ice Age Trail northeast of Wausau. It is considered to be a woodland wildflower as opposed to a prairie wildflower. He goes on to say, walking in a field of wildflowers is wonderful and therapeutic. Well, I know, Alan, you agree with that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. One thing I'd like to pass on to the listeners.
Yes? Well, I wanted to ask you while you're looking for that. I did want to ask you, there is differences in types of wildflower. Something can be a woodland wildflower as opposed to a prairie wildflower, as opposed to anything else?
That's right. And as you work with these forms, you realize that you can almost predict what kinds of flowers you're going to find in a particular habitat, because it is pretty narrow in some cases.
Yeah.
So that's something that you develop. The thing I was trying to come across is, imagine, if you will, what the world looked like before there were wildflowers. Can you imagine a world without wildflowers? And then ask yourself, when did wildflowers come into being on this earth? And probably the best guess at the moment is that we didn't have wildflowers here until about 55 million years ago, based on fossil evidence. And the first humans did not occupy the earth until about 4.5 million years ago. So you can see that from what we know about this connection so far, why the flowers were here before humans were here.
Yeah. Here's Mary in Partyville next. Hello, Mary.
Hello. I can't imagine not being surrounded by my wildflowers and how they attract my birds. It's absolutely wonderful. But the thing I wanted to talk about is nobody ever seems to mention bergamot. I got two big pails of seed from a friend of mine, and I planted bergamot all around and on an empty lot. The village seemed to object to it. However, now they seem to be tolerating it. But I have so much bergamot around, and it attracts bees and birds, and I love to watch the birds sit on the tippy top of these like 24-inch tall flowers. They're absolutely beautiful and smell delightful. I wonder if he knows anything about the bergamot.
Alan?
Is this what you say, bergamot, is that to say, does it end in the letter T, bergamot?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, I've seen this flower, but I can't say much about it. I've noticed it in the Dakotas and Minnesota. Those are some areas I've seen it.
Yeah.
But I can't, I'm sorry, I can't add a great deal to that.
And Mary, does it have a really pretty smell, or are those your other flowers?
No, it's a beautiful smell, and it's a beautiful purple flower that blooms. Well, now they're dried out, but they bloom for a real long time, purple. Something beautiful.
It sounds beautiful. And, you know, what we haven't talked a whole lot about, Alan, is talked a lot about wildflowers in many different ways, but the smell of wildflowers, there's
yes,
some beautiful
right.
ones there, too.
That's another connection in a therapeutic sense that we should point out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you mentioned this. There was.
Is there a particularly aromatic wildflower that might be highlighted in your book?
Did you say at a particular season?
No, I was wondering if there is one that smelled particularly good that you can highlight.
Oh, I'm trying to think where I may have seen and smelled some interesting ones.
Well, while you're thinking of that, we're almost out of time, and I have a couple more callers. Alex in Madison is with us. Hi, Alex.
Hi, I wanted to share a poem, actually, that has bergamot in it.
Oh, cool.
And before I do that, I just wanted to say that the thing I like about wildflowers is that the native species have been selected by the non-human life. And so we can learn a lot about our, as Aldo Leopold tells us, we can learn a lot about our natural history just by getting to know the wildflowers that are here and preserve the natural, non-human, created beauty.
Wonderful.
As the flowers were selected by bugs and bees and whatnot. But
very neat, Alex. We have a minute to go, so you may have to edit if it's longer than that.
Stretching, yawning, squinting in the morning sun, big brown waders pulled on, buckled suspenders, black met spinner tied, begins the walk on overgrown trails toward the shaded streamside wood. Fat brown bull snake across the path causes us to pause. Bergamot perfumes the air as we look out over thick patches like buzzing purple taverns.
Wonderful.
Very, very nice.
We have less than 30 seconds to go, Alan. What do you want listeners to take away from this, to remember about wildflowers?
Well, I guess I have to, I have to get back to my connection before in terms of preservation of these forms. And when you see wildflowers, try to appreciate them, try to protect them.
Thank you very much for being with us. Alan Vancara is the author of Wildflower Personalities.